south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, now here's a basic question you think someone would have asked me a long time ago. It says, "Dear Johnny, you talk a lot about cost of living down in Latin America, and how it differs when you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail, like in Costa Rica or Cancun, and when you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Now, you talk about it here and there, but you really never told us, your listeners, what your personal cost of living is. I assume, of course, after listening to you all of these years, you're living a first-world life, probably more than a first-world life. And though you sound like a real wheeler dealer and you can speak Spanish, it seems, that surely would give you a better leg up to live the first-world life on the cheap than I or most of your listeners would have. So come on, tell us, what does it cost for you to live down there in Latin America? So if you can, try to give us a kind of a monthly breakdown so we can compare it to our own cost of living. In my case, little Latin America itself, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You talk about my jammy being saturated with Latins, you should see Fort Lauderdale. In fact, the whole state of Florida, for that matter. It would seem in the whole southern half of the U.S., English is becoming the second language. But that's another subject, and as you say, I digress. From a longtime listener and first-time emailer, Maddie Barnhill. And by the way, I am coming down to your next seminar. Okay, Maddie, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a complete breakdown of my expenses per month. That is, when I'm not traveling, because that's when all bets are off. Anyway, first of all, let me tell you, I live a completely debt-free life. And you know, over the years, I found out that being out of debt is actually the key to happiness. Now, you might laugh at that, but let me tell you this. My old Uncle Bernie, God rest his soul, my godfather, once said to me a long time ago, back in the 60s, he said, "Johnny, only a person that's absolutely free from debt can wake up in the morning, look outside and say, hey, it's a beautiful day out there. I think I'm going to sleep in today. Hell, maybe I'll even sleep in tomorrow or the rest of the week." Why? Because at the end of the month, a person with no debt has no nut to crack. So then you can hit the pillow anytime you feel like it, with no big money stress and worries at the end of the month. And as a corollary, he also said, when you're free from that kind of monthly debt stress, you really don't have to suck up to your boss or kiss anyone's ass at work in order to keep a job you probably don't like, just to pay those bills. And like he said, very, very few people have ever experienced that kind of freedom. Now, everybody out there who's paying monthly payments on whatever, house, car, student loans, medical payments, or payments for that cruise you took last year, or maybe a second, even third mortgage for that kitchen mod your wife just had to have. That is the American way, right? And if you're stuck in that rut, you know what it's like to have a big nut to crack at the end of the month. You could never just wake up, look out the window and say, "Hell, I'm not going in today." Because you got to get right back on that treadmill, don't you? And you know, expat gonna-bes and wannabes send me emails telling me how much they want to leave and go to Latin America. But first, they have to pay down all those monthly bills they're on the hook for. In fact, I've had quite a few emails from gonna-bes and wannabes saying they don't think they'll ever get out from under that stuff and they want to come down to Latin America and just walk away from it all and disappear. So, is that a viable option? Well, for some people it is. I personally know quite a few expats, most of them long-term, who've done just that. Again, not that I'm recommending that, but it's being done all the time. So, then, let's talk a bit about debt and payment plans. Even though common wisdom has always been that the two things worth going into debt over are a house and a car. Now, I've always disagreed with that because of what my old Uncle Bernie once said. It's all right to go in debt for your house. Pay double payments or triple payments and you'll have it paid off in 5 to 7 years. Because you know you're going to pay 2 to 3 times the amount for that house in interest if you go the full term of the loan. Which is another story, but you knew that already, right? By any chance, do you remember the law of sevens? If you take out a loan for 7 years at 7% interest, when compounded, that means you're paying 100% in interest over that 7 years. Now, my old Uncle Bernie said a lot of wise things, including, screw the new car, buy a nice used one and pay cash. Maybe even a not-so-nice used one, but pay cash. Yeah, you heard that spiel before. It goes all the way back to Poor Richard's Almanac and Benjamin Franklin. Ne a lender, nor a borrower be. Remember that? Of course, he said that without ever seeing a Porsche or a late-model iPhone. No high-powered Madison Avenue advertising agencies back then either, huh? Oh, and it's much easier said than done. Marketers press our buttons so we buy things we don't need on time. That's the game, and almost every American plays it, right? And it's hard to get over that hump, especially when you're young and you're just leaving mommy's and daddy's house. With great expectations and a boatload of credit, and your first apartment has absolutely nothing in it but a beanbag chair and a mattress on the floor. We've all been there before, right? Or at least most of us. That is, us unfortunates who didn't have wealthy or doting parents. Anyway, back to my particular case. Only once, back in the States, in a moment of weakness, did I ever buy a car on time, and I paid it off in 1 year. But I digress as usual. Once I got down here to Latin America, it was cash 100% of the time for me anyway. Now, since I don't have a house payment or a car payment, that makes life much easier. And as for what I'm going to discuss now, if I had a rent payment, for example, I guarantee I wouldn't be paying any more than $400 or $500 a month, and it would be absolutely a first-class place. And oftentimes, you get all the utilities and the maintenance thrown in, too. In fact, $300 to $400 a month would be more likely. I can tell you right now, within a week, I could find a first-world-style apartment or condo or even a house for around $300 to $400 that's brand new. I'll be the first one in. That's how big, extensive, and overbuilt the housing bubble is down here in Latin America, especially in the bigger cities. And of course, like I mentioned, and I think it was last week's show, there are some very, very nice first world style places out in the burbs now, where it seems all the upper middle class Latins that no longer want to live in the city center are moving out to. You know, fresh air, open spaces, gardens, trees, great views, something you just can't get in a big Latin city. Okay, with that out of the way, here are my general monthly expenses. I've got a water bill of about $20 a month, which is really rather high for Latin America. It should be more like $5 to $10 a month, but that's just the way it is. It depends on your subdivision, residential tower, or condo, whatever. And if, God forbid, you have municipal water, which I don't recommend, but sometimes you can't get around it, you'll pay a whole hell of a lot less, sometimes only $2 or $3 a month. Now, in my subdivision, we have a private well with our own big reservoir, and for that $20, you get to use what they call one paja of water each month. A paja, P-A-J-A, is 30 cubic feet of water. That's about 8,000 gallons of water that I can use each month. So I pay $20 a month whether I use one drop of water or 30 cubic feet of water, 8,000 gallons. And down here, in Latin America anyway, the average family of four uses about half that, 15 cubic meters of water a month, about 4,000 gallons. Now, of course, I'm talking about Latins who live in upscale subdivisions, because people living in middle and lower middle class housing hooked up to municipal water, they'll use less than a quarter of that, under 2,000 gallons a month. Oh, sure, they'd waste and abuse their water if they could. However, when it comes out of the tap under low pressure, the thickness of a pencil, for maybe only 8 to 12 hours a day, they're a lot more cautious with their water supply than we are. Anyway, since I'm not a family of four, nowhere near it, I use between 5 and 10 cubic meters of water a month. Now remember, the average American up in Cleveland uses about 100 gallons of water a day, or 3,000 gallons a month. So for a family of four, that's 12,000 gallons a month. About 45 cubic meters of water. So the average wasteful family of four up in Cleveland could never get by on one paja of water, even though a so-called upscale Latin family gets by on half of that. So if, like me, you have one paja and you do go over that 30 cubic meters a month, the additional overage charges can get heavy. You'll pay anywhere from $3 to $5 for every cubic meter you use over your quota. So, for example, if you used 35 meters of water that month, that extra 5 cubic meters of water could cost you more than your 30 meters you're entitled to, that one paja. And by the way, for example, if you have a really big family, let's say you got 10 people in the house, you might need 2 pajas of water. So then what? Never fear, you can buy that extra paja and get 30 more cubic feet per month. And you buy that from your municipality or your local subdivision water authority. So you might pay, for example, an extra $500 or $1,000, a one-time payment, to get an extra paja forever. That's much cheaper than buying the excess water you use over your quota, which, like I said, comes at a very heavy price. Now, some people and families buy just one half a paja. You see that a lot with middle and lower class folks who can't afford to buy a whole paja all at once when they buy, build, or obtain a lot to build on. And note, you buy it when you first move in, and if you rent, you don't have to pay for it. The landlord never mentions it. And if you buy a used home, it's included in the price. They never mention it either. Now, if you don't pay that paja fee when you first get your house or your lot, they won't turn the water on for you. So then what do I recommend? Well, if you got a family of four or less, get one paja, even though for a single person or a couple, it's overkill. And here's a little tip about pools here in Latin America. If you live on the coast or at sea level, you're going to need one. Anyway, if you're going to fill or refill your pool, you'll go way over that paja and pay a lot of money for that water. Look at your bill and see what your average monthly usage is. Let's say it's 15 cubic meters a month, and you've got a paja, so you've got 15 extra. Well, that month you put 15 cubic meters into your pool and stop at 30. Then you'll have no extra charges because you're paying for 30, remember? Then when the next month rolls around, you put another 15 in. And the next month, another 15. You'll just have to look at the meter and make sure you don't go over 15 meters. So then after about 2 or 3 months, you'll have that pool filled and you'll be all set. Now, you might think I'm being a cheapskate about all this, but it could cost you $200 or $300 just for the water if you filled it up all at one time. Okay, so maybe I am a skinflint, but a couple $100 is a couple $100. Okay, for my next monthly expense, I pay about $50 a month for my electric bill. And since I have a gas water heater, a gas stove, and a gas dryer, I generally buy 2 100-pound propane gas tanks a year. And just recently, I had them refilled, that is, changed. They come and take your empties and bring you new filled ones. Actually, they're not new. They're beat-up old rusted ones that look quite dangerous, but they're really not. Though, if looks could kill, I'd have been dead a long time ago. And those two tanks cost me $100, so I'm looking at about $8 or so a month prorated for the gas. Though, admittedly, propane gas prices are very low right now. They've dropped along with the price of the barrel of oil. Now, about a year ago, when prices were much higher, I was paying about maybe $12 a month prorated for that propane gas, which really isn't much. But do note this, if you do have a gas dryer like I do, and you use it all the time, that thing will be responsible for about half of your propane gas usage. So if you want to cut that bill in half, you just have your maid or cleaning lady hang your clothes to dry outside, like practically everyone else does, except, of course, us gringos. Though admittedly, it could be a neighborhood showstopper with all those boxers and unmentionables floating in the breeze. Now, normally, no one in the neighborhood would really care except you are the gringo. Thus, you are the curiosity in the neighborhood. And at times, your crazy actions to them will be the topic of discussion at their dinner table. Latins see gringos on TV all the time, but they really want to know how an actual gringo lives. And since you is one, they'll take notice of the differences, including the color and size of your boxers. So watch what you display out on that clothesline. Yeah, I know. Up in the States, that clothesline routine is a thing of the past. But don't tell me if you saw someone hanging their laundry, you wouldn't take a peek too, and maybe judge a person by his or her unmentionables. That said, maybe you should stick with the dryer. And speaking of maids and cleaning ladies, I have mine come in twice a week, 2 8-hour days, and she gets about $25 a week, $12.50 a day, so she makes a grand total of $100 a month. And by the way, as much as she wants to do my laundry, I'd never let her touch the stuff. Now, as far as my gardener slash maintenance man, he comes in 2 8-hour days a week too and makes about $100 a month. Okay, then as for my food expenses, I'd say about $100 a month. I like to shop at those big, open, fresh produce markets. I go about twice a week. And I do end up occasionally going to a few box stores, you know, Walmart and Costco. Yeah, I know, if I was a purist, I wouldn't do that. Though I do try to hit some of the little mom-and-pop tiendas. They don't have much of a selection, and unfortunately, or fortunately, Walmart and Costco do. Hey, I'm not going to lie to you. That's where I get my olive oil, bulk walnuts, and pecans. Yep, I occasionally shop at box stores, so shoot me. Okay, next on my monthly expense list, I have liability third-party car insurance, which is what I recommend for everyone who has a car down in Latin America, and I pay about $150 a year for that, which breaks down to about $13 a month. Of course, I pay it yearly. I don't get billed once a month. That's crazy. Now, I know a lot of gringos and expats and fresh expats especially will go out and find liability insurance and they'll pay twice that. Why? Because they don't know what I know. Basically, it's not because you're a gringo and they're trying to nail you with gringo prices. It's more a language barrier and you can't read the policy, so you take what insurance quote they give you. And you know insurance brokers will always try to push the maximum limits on everyone. And since you're in a foreign country and you don't know any better, and the prices seem really cheap even then, gringos and expats are usually glad to pay the first quote given, but you don't have to pay that. In fact, not so long ago, one of my expat buddies, who I met through my expat wisdom seminars, he scanned a quote from his insurance company on his car down here in Latin America, and I scanned mine and sent it back to him and said, "Here's what you do. You go right back into that office and tell your broker that you want this exact policy, my policy. And you too will pay about $150 a year. And remember, even with that cheap third-party liability, you get full AAA-type insurance coverage. You know, towing, emergency service, even if you lock yourself out or you run out of gas, they'll come and help you. It's part of your policy. And then I pay about $50 US a month for my full coverage medical health insurance plan. By the way, those people that come down to my Expat Wisdom Seminar, they get the complete minutiae and details on that. So what's next? Oh yeah. And then I've got a couple of big dogs, and that costs me about $50 a month in food. I got my internet bill, it's about $30 a month, and my cable TV, which I rarely watch. I guess I just have it to amuse the cleaning lady. And then I have my phone bill, my dumb phone bill, which runs about $20 a month. Oh, and let's not forget that huge property tax bill I pay. Whoa! A whopping $150 a year. So we'll round that out to $13 a month. And then there's petrol for the car. Now, lately that's been running around $10 a week, $40 a month, but you know how that can change. So then adding all this stuff up, I hope I haven't left anything out. That's a total monthly expenditure for me. Rounded out to the high side, I'd say around $600 a month. Then, if you add entertainment and going out, let's say another $300 a month, which for me would be way overdoing it, but who knows how you feel about that. Anyway, I don't drink liquor, not because I'm against it, but because alcohol gives me migraines. The upside? Well, I've saved thousands of dollars over the years. And the downside? Well, I get the shaft every time I go to an all-inclusive resort. That said, now we're looking at a total expenditure of $900 a month. So let's add another $100 a month to that for miscellaneous stuff. You know, the essentials like clothes, makeup, tattoo, work, and hair products. And that's about all the expenses I have. But as for most people, coming down as a fresh green expat, you'll have to rent a place. And like I said, you could easily get a first world style place for $400 a month. So now we're up to $1,400 a month. And quite possibly, if you don't have the money to buy a car, you'll be taking public transportation or taxis, whatever. So then let's toss another $100 a month into the mix for transportation. And now we're up to $1,500 a month. That would be for most new expats coming down, not for long-term expats like me who've got a car and a house already paid for. So anyway, you're looking at about $1,500 a month to live an absolutely first-world style of life. That happens to fall right in the range of your average Social Security check. Oh, and by the way, you might think I've left out traveling and vacations and stuff. Well, when you're down here, you're kind of on a permanent vacation. You'll find that out. And by the way, you can dip into that $300 a month entertainment expense I was talking about if you feel like doing some traveling. Okay, so now you have an idea of what I spend every month when I'm not traveling. And you should be able to do absolutely the same thing too. In fact, if you're a couple or a pair, your expenses will not be double because you'll be sharing a lot of things. So I estimate that for two people, you could easily live a first world life on $2,000 a month or so. Okay, changing gears just a little bit. Remember on my last show, or was it the show before it, I was talking about vaccines down here in Latin America. Well, after that, I got an email from one of my expat wisdom seminar attendees, who is for now living back up in the States and getting all the ducks lined up to come down. And in this particular case, this is a single lady who's retired and using her pension income and Social Security to go directly to permanent residency. And she says in her email, Johnny, over the years, I've had various medical problems, nothing really serious. But for over 10 years now, doctors have been telling me that I've got osteoporosis and I've been on various drugs to sort of normalize that. Whether I need those drugs or not, I don't know. And what I'm hoping is when I get down to Latin America, I can continuously go to those fresh food and produce markets like the one you took us to at the seminar. Then I'm certain I'll be able to eat very cheap and very healthy. So I was thinking that once I get down there, I'll load my kitchen up with all the fresh food and vegetables that I can muster. And I'll have absolutely no excuse to run off to the corner store or Walmart to buy some junk food. Because, you know, that seems to be the problem with me and so many of my friends. We really can follow advice and eat right. But to quote Oscar Wilde, I have terrific willpower. I can resist anything except temptation. So my thought is when I come down there, I'm going to stock my kitchen completely from top to bottom with fresh foods and vegetables from those fantastic big markets. And there'll be no need or necessity for junk food, processed food, or boxed food. None of that in my house. Therefore, no temptation to stray. So that's the plan, and I'm going to stick to it. But the real reason I'm writing this email is to tell you that as far as this osteoporosis thing I've been dealing with for 10 years or so, now one of my doctors here says he thinks I should get one of these new injections of a drug called Peolia. Now, from what he says, I'll need to have only two of these injections a year, but one shot costs $2,800. Now, my insurance company and Ovomitcare, whatever, will probably pick up three quarters of that. Wait a minute, did she say Ovomitcare? I'm going to steal that if it's all right with her. Ovomitcare. Excellent. Then she says, even so, that doesn't matter. I don't want this injection. And like I said, I'm really hoping when I get down there to get off meds altogether. Right now, I'm taking four prescription medicines, but I'm also 40 pounds overweight, don't exercise much, and can't really resist, you know, temptation. That said, I'm not going to take that $2,800 shit. I'm sure she meant shot, even if I was to stay up here in Madison. That said, when I get down to Latin America, I don't care if they're giving away syringes full of that Prolia stuff on street corners. I'm not going to take it. Thanks for all that great information, Johnny. Denise. Okay, Denise. Thanks for that. And as for that injection you're talking about, I'd be willing to bet just about anything that doctors down here, though they might be aware of it, do not use it or prescribe it. The fact is, all that talk about osteoporosis up in the States with all those knee and hip replacements, the fact is everyone in the States knows someone who's had a joint replacement. Whereas down here, it's almost impossible to find a regular local Latin, whether rich or poor, who even knows what you're talking about when you mention the subject. As for osteoporosis, if you talk to an orthopod down here, he'll tell you it's an affliction of the rich. And even then, scant few wealthy folks even have those kind of operations. It seems that the only people down here you ever run into who've got artificial joints are gringos and expats. Not that they don't do those operations down here. They do. But I've been down here 25 plus years now, and I've yet to meet a single Latin person who has one. Oh, and by the way, on the subject of vaccines, this might make you laugh. Now, when I was a kid, the polio vaccine in my day was a sugar cube. You may or may not have heard that was a method of giving it out to some people. Anyway, I remember going to Catholic school one day, I think it was in second or third grade, and we all had to file into the cafeteria, you know, a couple hundred kids, and as we walked through, we were handed a tiny paper cup with a sugar cube in it. And when I took mine and bit into it, I noticed there was an ugly yellow stain in the center of it. And since I wasn't one of those kids that liked sugar much anyway, I looked around, and when no one was looking, I spit it out and threw it in the trash. Now, weeks later, we filed in again to get another dose, and I did the same thing. This time, I didn't bite into it. I just gave it to this fat kid named Roger Miner, who would eat anything. And two more times, some weeks later, we got those cubes, and Roger Miner sucked mine down. Now, I can keep a secret, and I kept this one for a long, long time. In fact, it was only a few weeks ago when talking to my mother on the phone from Chicago, when on the subject of vaccines and how many her grandkids had received, I told her that little polio vaccine story for the first time. She said, really? With all we're hearing about autism and stuff, you did yourself a favor. So then not having the vaccine and supposedly being, quote, unprotected, did I get polio? Nope. Did anybody I know back then get polio? Well, in fact, I did know someone with polio. I, in fact, met a girl in her 20s before I ever came down to Latin America. And she, in fact, told me that she had polio and one of her legs was a little bit shorter than the other and less muscular. And thank God, she said, it was barely noticeable, even in a bikini. Only because she went through a grueling year and a half of physical therapy as a young kid. But the clincher to that story is that she actually got polio from the vaccine. Turns out her parents were British and her dad was stationed at a gold mine in Mombasa, Kenya. And the corrupt UN and the stinking World Health Organization, WHO, came in and vaccinated all the local poor Africans and the kids in the expat British colony. And for some reason, the vaccine was a little bit too powerful, and a lot of the kids came down with polio right after that. And as a result of that, her father, her mother, and all her extended family will never forgive the UN or the World Health Organization. And because of that, they'll never trust a word of government or UN propaganda or publicity. Man, was she ahead of her time, huh? Now, she was part of the British expat community, so she got expert physical therapy treatment. But the local black kids, they got secondary polio from those vaccines. Nobody knows what happened to them. Surely, they got zero help and zero physical therapy. If that's not bad enough, the story doesn't end there. Turns out, some people who get polio at an early age can have a recurrence much later in life, called post-polio syndrome. After the initial bout and a long period of stability, a large percentage of people who long ago recovered began to experience new signs and symptoms like muscular atrophy, pain, weakness, fatigue. And it's said that the younger you are when you first contracted it, the more likely you are to have this syndrome. Now, as weird as this sounds, the most famous example of this is Arthur C. Clarke, you know, the author of 2001 Space Odyssey. He first contracted polio in 1962. After physical therapy, he did recover, only to be hit again with post-polio syndrome in 1988. And he died from the complications. And because this syndrome affects 25 to 50% of people who had it as a youngster, this British girl I mentioned before feels she has a kind of a black cloud hanging over her head, since on average, the reoccurrence happens about 30 to 35 years after the first attack, the time frame she's in right now. And what of the fate of poor Roger Miner, who sucked down both his, mine, and who knows how many other kids' sugar cubes? Roger, if you're out there and you did get polio, sorry about that.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.